Hi everyone, very good to be here. It's quite a lot of you tonight, so it's daunting. I want to say thank you to Paul for inviting me to guest tonight. Thanks very much, Paul, and for everything you do with our band. Much appreciated. And apologies to some of you who may have been at the launch in February, because you may have heard some of this banter, but you can't invent banter every time you do. Yeah, so some of this, what I'm going to do is read you some of the, take you through the book, which can be purchased along with other New Binary Press products from the lovely Mary. Yeah, let's say hello. I'll say something more about that as we go along. I'm going to read the first poem. The first poem is based on an incident, an event with a taxi driver years ago, I mean about 15 years ago. I've been here, as was said, since 95. I got in the taxi, I was late for work, and he said, "Oh, you're on your holiday then?" Because he heard my accent, you know. "You're on your holiday." So, no, I work here. I went, where do you work? I work in the university. What department do you work in? I work in the English department. "Or do you know John Montague?" "Well, I know of him, you know." Colbert Carney, blah, 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 blah. Listed all the names. Sisteruna, he even knew who Sisteruna was, a long time ago. So we talked a lovely discussion about the Department of English, and then I gave him the money, and the last thing he said to me was, "So enjoy your holiday then." So this is called "I Wouldn't Start From Here." I'd start from there, or over there, or anywhere really but here. You see, here is nowhere until it's someone somewhere. And it will never be that until someone you perhaps is somewhere else. I was once somewhere else, so I know what I'm about, and could not speak true as I do on this topic if I had not travelled far out into the misty murk of there and over there, many, many receding roads, every circular one of which homewards led me here. These are my hilltop lights, this is my moon, my urban stream, my nighttime dogs, my comfortable, familiar rain. Those who ask for directions are clearly not at home, and quite clearly then, logically, should not start from here. I dedicate that poem to UKIP in England. Okay, so, second poem. This is an Irish collection. I mean, I'm from England originally, but I've been here 20 years, and I'm writing about Cork, so in that sense I think this is an Irish collection. And it's dotted with references to places in Cork, particularly in Cork. This second one is dedicated to James here, who's the mastermind behind New Binary Press, mastermind behind the Weary Blues Journal, mastermind behind many, many good things that have happened in the last couple of years in Cork to do with poetry and literature. And James, you know, you'll wonder. We're going to lose James. He's going to America.
This one?
He's going to America. Terrible, but he says to me he'd be back eventually. So this is a poem about a kind of ghost. There are lots of ghosts in this collection. This is a boy who's kind of not been born yet, maybe one day, but he's been in my head for years. It's called Military Hill. What do you want? What would you have wanted? I see you sometimes in the street. I did not mean to keep you unborn. You are playing football. You have brown eyes and a hurt nose. You are running for your life. I cannot help you. From this distance you have no name. You burn in the palm of my hand. You stand unseen outside of every window. We did not hear you calling or you yourself with death. But we need you now, Cork boy with matted hair, a toy gun and torn trousers, kicking cans down Military Hill, madly excited about tomorrow. So it's a poem in a sense, I suppose, about tomorrow, about the possibility of tomorrow. One of the terrible things about the recession, and one of the things I'm trying to write about in this collection, is the Celtic Tiger and its demise, was the cancellation of so many futures. I mean, as a lecturer with loads of postgrads, I mean, I see it almost every week, futures having been cancelled. My symbol for that is the Elysian, the idle tower by the idle hour. They built the tallest building in Ireland, apparently, to put loads of ghosts in. And I think it's a symbol. I think we should. At the launch, I noted the fact that Pat Cotter has written a poem called The Elysian. I've written a poem called The Elysian. I think we should all write poems about The Elysian. But maybe something will be done with it if we all write poems about nihilism. We can do things with writing after all. It does have an effect sometimes. But I also think it symbolises the Celtic tiger itself. What did they think they were doing? There's a Japanese... One thing that's clear for me is that children were never intended to go into that building. There's a Japanese rock garden in the bottom base. Has anyone ever been in there? I got myself in it. Any self-respecting child under the age of 14 will cut themselves to shreds within seconds of playing in that rock garden. You can go up to the elevator and you go up the top and you can look down over the 18 floors or whatever it is. The motto for the... There's Billy, by the way. We're going to do this, are we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We're going to do a collection called the Elysian. The motto for the Elysian, if you looked at their catalogue, was a very stylish affair. The Elysian. A very stylish affair. Mary, can I just...
Thank you.
If you look at their catalogue, on two different occasions... Thank you. On two different occasions, there's a man leaning against the wall, obliterating the face of a woman. On two occasions, just so that you know that it's not a mistake. A very stylish affair. They built the biggest building in Ireland so the captains of industry could put their mistresses in them. That's my reading of that. And I'm a professor of literature, so I know how to read a little bit. What would they think they were doing? So this is a poem called The Elysian. Ghost factory, high-rise imitation, empty observatory. The only occupants are resident tonight. They have made two campfires, square eyes gazing northwards. The blue haze of the television flickers, tiny people in a fragile ghost house. I see their shades as they walk past sources of light. The bedroom lamp is constant. Above them a green fist, one finger pointing at the moon. Down the unpaced corridors, out of untried locks and windows, through unopened shop fronts, down into the unviewed garden vista, flows the news about tomorrow. The visionaries have all gone blind under orange emergency strip lighting. If you listen very carefully, without motion, without breath, you can almost hear the sound of children playing in the elevators, splashing in the sculptured rock pool, plunging to their early deaths. Okay, so, this is going to go quite quick, really. That's almost the end of the first. Just want to read a four-line poem. The collection that I'm sure you're going to buy tonight, because New Binary Press needs a boost. The collection is in two sections, and the first one is about the Celtic tiger. The second one I'll get into after this last poem from the first section. Another core poem, Patrick Street. It's a four-line poem that I was honoured that both Billy... At the launch, both Billy Mansell over there and who's the other fella?
Jerry,
that's right. I forgot his name for a moment. Jerry Murphy. They both wanted to read this poem. I think partly because it was only four lines long. But I think also because they liked it. I think it's about something that happened almost 100 years ago. Your new millennial tiles are cool beneath the feet of floodlit winter shoppers. Have you forgotten so quickly how everything within you burned? Okay, so the second section of this collection takes you to Italy. So we leave Cork. I've got a... We leave Cork and go to Italy, and in particular we go to a place called Lago Trasimeno, Lake Trasimeno, which is this beautiful lake near Umbria, in Umbria, near Perugia, just down from Florence. And it's a beautiful place, and it's a tourist place now, cycle around it, whatever. But it's a historical place, because it's where Hannibal had his first great victory when he invaded in the Second Punic Wars, with these elephants and whatever. So you need to know a few things, okay? You need to know that I'm terrified of lightning. That's one thing you need to know. Second, you need to know something about the battle. So the central section of this Italian thing is called Beyond Livy. And it's kind of about a guy that invades another country, but he doesn't have a plan. Does that remind you of anyone, maybe, more recently? And he kicks their asses a few times, and then he sort of says, and what are we going to do now, kind of thing. Which is what Hannibal did. He could have invaded Rome, he could have entered Rome, he didn't. His name was Barker, that's his surname. What else do you need to know? They used to get the elephants drunk before battle, so the elephants would sort of wade in. Sometimes they'd come back the other way because they didn't know what they were doing. You need to know that Hannibal's brother's head was chopped off and then flown into the camp late at night. You need to know that African Scipio Africanus is the guy that finally beat him. And you need to know, I think, that they're hidden in the trees in the hills. They let Flaminius come along by the lake, trapping themselves, and then they descended. And what really blows my head, really thinking about it, there was an earthquake at the same time that morning. What's the chances of that? Yeah. And for the locals, the difference between Hannibal and an earthquake couldn't have been, you know, Hannibal was the weather, basically. Flaminius shouldn't have ever left that morning because the chickens wouldn't eat their breakfast, famously, which is a really bad sign, and he should have attended to that and say, let's stay at home, boys. Anyway, I'm going to read you four bits. One. The storm fizzes and crackles in your brain as you scatter back to your flammable shack, your mind full of current and full of Barker, the chosen one, storm maker, sweeping down from out of the Alps. He was a man who made the weather spread in violence out of his lips, his eye, unimaginable, godlike to scholars, poets and other men who retreat, cower and wait for death, instantaneous vaporization, and can barely understand the common soldier's unbroken line, their willingness to face the fire. At Saguntum, for example, they pushed on without him, the enemy's hot spears whizzing past their heads. 7. I see one anachronistic bullet defying time, space and logic, the separate chapters, the separated events of his narration. One magic bullet retelling the story of how violence begets violence, making Barker half blind as it rips through his face, siding down as from machine guns, uncontrollable elephants, refusing to ford the bloody Mataris, severing the brother's head from the brother's shoulders before it pops like a seed pressed from that much-loved nose and slams with unprecedented force into the very idea of Carthage. This is the bullet originally shot from Eden that one day will murder history. When the Romans had defeated Hannibal, they went to Carthage and they erased it from the earth, basically. The other thing you need to know, the last two poems of this series I'm going to read you, is I find it peculiar, but it's apparently what they did when the Romans, when they wanted their children to be quiet at night, used to scare them by saying Hannibal is at the gates. Hannibal ad portas. That's a very funny thing to do if you want your children to be quiet for that. So Hannibal's like the bogeyman, or what they might call a spiragmos, a scapegoat. 12. Scipio learned what Hannibal knew. Civilization takes over from nature, so that men learn to become the weather and strike like lightning out of the hills. And nature is necessary so that Rome can presume its right to roll like verdure over the world. Remember, though, he was no pharmacos, knocked up only to be knocked down. He was the unappeasable nightmare every new Rome must repress. Something unpleasant to swallow, sucked down into untried guts, the most unpalatable medicine known. And he is at the Colline Gates. Call him the Gulf Stream shutting down, or tens of millions dispossessed. At bedtime, repeat, Hannibal ad portas. 13. When troops are shifted across the globe in locust numbers, and the big guns and the newly shaped ships are lifted out of the dockyards and factories of the world, when women return to their household gods, neglected during times of peace, and wives and mothers leave their work to spend all day by the shrines and inside chapels, when tanks begin to patrol the streets of those who have given up their sons and daughters to the great cause of God knows what, and politicians grin and speak of sacrifice and eventual liberation, and everything is necessary and nothing makes sense, then whisper to your sleeping children, Hannibal ad portas. Okay, so that's what you can buy tonight. But if I go on, I'm going to repeat too much in the law, so I'm going to actually read some new stuff. Is that alright? I want to prove to you that I'm not a one trick pony. Paul Guinness. So one of the things that's interesting when you do that, you write a collection of this, you notice the kind of poems you've been writing. That sounds a bit strange, but when you write, you don't always reflect upon what you're doing, you just do it. And one of the things I noticed that I was doing is I was writing war poetry. That's what I've been doing over the last while. I'm an Irish poet. I'm also an English poet. I'm deeply ashamed of England's performance historically over the last decade and a half. I think the war in Iraq is a terrible, terrible, terrible hypocrisy, etc., etc. So I found that I was writing about that. I've continued to write about that. This is a new poem. It's not been published yet. It's called Back Home. And that was me thinking Back Home as a First World War poem, a song. You know, because I'm thinking about First World War poems, songs. It's not actually. It's the Paul would know this. It's the it's the England football team song in the 1970 World Cup finals. Actually, back home. Anyway, the title will remain, even though I made a mistake on it. Back home. The other thing you need to know about this is pawn shops. I'm a pawn with a W. Okay. I stood in the Roman Road a couple of years ago, and I looked at, you know, pawn shops are where you take your worldly goods so that you can get money so you can eat. And I looked at the Roman Road, and there was a pawn shop there, 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 and there was five of them within visible range of where I could see. Back home. These are the words we can think of to utter. This is the time we are living in now. An Arctic wind blows down the Roman road, segues through the pawn shops and enters your heart. No one bothers about the fattened ghosts. Decrepit crones inch forward on their buggies. Hoodies dart in and out of the dark. The stench of disappointment rises from the gutter. That man is a racist and a public servant. That policewoman is bullied by her boss. Celebrity culture is raging, sovereign, everyone transfixed by a shabby detail. The imagination is that ability of yours to conjure up at any time the worst. A jet plane crashes into an office block. Guards with heavy weapons break into the house. Lightning eradicates the future. Drones seek out your sister and your son. Somewhere in the foothills of Afghanistan, 200 years after sallies with the Brits, unregistered, unnoticed, as you leaf through jazzled t-shirts hung up in a stall, your only son takes a bullet in the helmet, imagining your thin fingers as he drowns. I've noticed that one of the other things I noticed is a bit depressing as a poem. I'm sorry about that. I've tried to put a couple of love poems at the end, okay? So there is something positive we're moving towards. We're not quite there yet. This is another four-line poem that I like, and I wonder if Billy would like this one. It's a four-line poem. It's a good genre, the four-line poem, I think. This is called The Enlightenment. A car alarm accidentally triggered in the middle of the night as you try to sleep. This is dedicated to Kevin Griffin, this next one, who's come all the way from Kerry, with Noel. Thank you very much for coming that far. And it's a poem in which I've cheated, in which I've turned... What do you think that animal was that was beached last Christmas? Was it a porpoise? I'll get a drink whilst you ask.
I couldn't be sure.
Well, I've turned it into a dolphin. Yeah. I don't think it was a dolphin. But it was on the beach, and it had this massive hole in the middle of it. Really dramatic, with this scarring around it. I don't know what happened to the poor creature, apart from the fact that it was dead. The other thing about this poem is that there's rhyme in it, which is unusual for me. It's called Ross Bay. The bundle of swimmer's clothes turns into a beach dolphin. Sunlight streaks the curves of its sleek alien skin. Its snout is a fastened zip, glistening razor wire. On its back, an orange hole the size of an elephant's eye. It is a black hole consuming matter till it sprouts one of Van Gogh's sunflowers turned inside out. I put the helmet off inside my phone and left. Months later, I saw, how could I have missed, a pancake stone monument, a childish headstone, complete with twig antenna, ET phoning home. There's one more I wasn't going to read, but I am going to read it. And so it's the last of the depressing ones. Kind of. But I want to test this out. Can you tell me whether this is too much or not? Okay.
Clapometer.
Not a clapometer. So I'll come up afterwards and say that don't do anything with that. It's called politician, and maybe it's a little bit too angry. But I can't say some of my best friends are politicians. Politician. You are a cipher. An egg-shaped zero, less than useful, more than useless. Your mother would not credit you. You are an expensive national joke, a lie against every decent value. The tears you create you do not see, the pain you promote occurs in bodies you will never stand beside or touch. Nothing brings you to account. Your tongue is a blunt stick of splinters, your eyes are holes where moss has taken, your brain is a bucket full of wasps. Everything you finger turns to pus. Every flash of your brain is a suicide. Your plans are a pile of unsteady bricks. Your hopes are shit smeared across a windscreen. Your big idea is a stillborn fetus slipping out of a refuge sack. The promise of election drags at you like a Hoover pulls in a spider's web. But you have seen who is really in charge, and it's left you blind, clueless, flaccid. Speak into the camera now with a smile and scripted words that stick on your lips. Promote big business, taxation and war. Crude marionette with visible strings. Say phrases like, there's no alternative, and what people really need to understand, and most of all, this hurts us as well. Then go home and do not wake your children. Drink from that bottle behind the cabinet as your wife dreams of other men, and sink into the consoling thought that somebody has to do these things. Too much? Okay, we're nearly done.
Okay.
So, I promised you love poetry. That's not the first time I've ever said that. Different context here. The first poem is not a love poem so much as it's an admiration poem. One of my friends was 50 last year, and her husband had this lovely idea of people writing stuff for it, so I wrote something for her. One of the reasons I want to read it is that she said she liked it. And this woman is someone I find, I write about her now and again, she's a bit of a muse. She said it made her feel like Sandra Bullock in Gravity. Now, I haven't seen that film, so I don't know what she means, so maybe someone at the end can tell me what she means. But it's called Something in You Remains Completed. Let this be, let this one thought stand. The sun dies every day it is born. Tears fall and are not replaced. Time cracks open the thickest masonry. Every atom swerves, inclines to its end. But something in you resists, intact, against all law and every sentence, against the measure and slant of things, contrapuntal to the fact of life, death, being and mutability. Like a song overheard from another world, like a stone gathers all things to itself, like a question no one ever thought to ask. Something in you remains completed. And the last poem, okay, last poem. Last poem is a love poem, but typical, it's a bit typical of me, it's inverted, okay. So I think it's a very hopeful poem, but it might not sound like it to you. Again, you can tell me afterwards. What you need to know about this poem is the plant or the weed referred to at the end in the last line is apparently one of the most tremendously pernicious and persistent and tremendously violent and all-abiding weeds that currently exist on the earth and is thriving in places in Ireland and England as we speak. It pushes through concrete like butter. The poem is called The Purpose of Love Poetry in 21st Century Ireland. In the driveway of the 357th house on the 599th abandoned ghost estate where no car has ever driven and no human eye will ever say goodbye, where no photographs will ever be snapped or surprise birthday parties spill outside, where no birds sit on drying hydrangeas and no postmen anticipate waiting dogs, where no meter readings will ever be taken or quick illicit kisses ever be snatched, where rain splashes thick on unwashed concrete and urban wolves search in vain for food, where rats scurry out from mud-clogged drains and hungry crows peck between drab-coloured slabs, where snails inch out from sodden gutters and nothing disturbs the keening of the wind, the welcoming shade of the Japanese knotweed. Thank you.